This morning, my guests are Stuart Hall and Sue Foley. Stuart is a former science reference librarian at San Francisco State University, and Stuart has non-Alzheimer's dementia. And with him is Sue Foley. Sue is his mentor and assistant 2 days a week, and theirs is a very special relationship. This morning, we're going to be exploring Stuart's writing of limericks, and we're going to have a lot of fun. But first, I want to talk just a little bit about dementia. Dementia is an umbrella term. It's used to describe a host of symptoms of brain disease and cognitive impairment. We use it as a way to describe a decline in memory and other thinking skills that are severe enough to reduce a person's ability to perform normal everyday activities. Most often, we hear about Alzheimer's disease, which accounts for 60 to 80% of dementia cases, and also vascular dementia, which occurs after a stroke. It's the second most common dementia type. There are also some other medical conditions that can cause symptoms of dementia, including some that are reversible, such as thyroid problems or vitamin deficiencies. Everyone who has dementia has different symptoms, and everyone's journey is different. But in order to be diagnosed with dementia, one demonstrates a loss in 2 of 5 different categories of core mental functions. And those are memory, communication and language, the ability to focus and pay attention, reasoning and judgment, and visual perception. People with dementia or Alzheimer's disease have short-term memory loss and often have difficulty keeping track of their belongings, paying bills, planning and preparing meals, remembering appointments, or traveling out of their neighborhood. Those are the common signs of early forms of dementia. 1 in 3 seniors dies with Alzheimer's or some form of dementia. That may not be the cause of their death, but they have some form of dementia. And there are more than 5 million Americans living with dementia of some kind. So anyway, I want to go on to talk with Stuart and Stu. I think I'll change that. It's Stuart and Sue. Anyway, you guys have a really, really neat relationship. And Sue, why don't you start off by telling us how you got involved in being in relationship with people who have brain disorders?
Good morning, everybody. I'm Sue Foley. I'm a licensed certified nursing assistant. I chose this career path in 2009 after retiring from film and television. In film and television, I worked in the assistant director department, and so I was exposed to many behaviors that were interesting. It was a very high-pressure work environment, and at one point, I decided that I wanted to take a different route, and I had run into a gentleman who was wandering.
You mean wandering on the street?
Yes, and when I use the term wandering, I used to describe an actual scenario in which an elder with cognitive impairment has become disoriented. And this gentleman that I ran into in 2009, I noticed that he was not intoxicated, was not mentally ill, and yet he was talking about the war in the South Pacific. And he had one shoe on his foot and a telephone number on the other shoe. And so I called that number and returned him to his home. And I was so fascinated by that experience. And I felt that literally my fate, or that I had collided with my fate when I met this elder gentleman, that I went up to the community college and discussed this with a nurse.
And you were living where at the time?
I was in South Florida visiting my family when I was trying to come up with a new career idea. And I was blessed to have met a gentleman named Charles.
So you went to the community college and what did you ask them?
The nurse at the community college, it was actually in Lake Worth, Florida, and they have a wonderful program in which you take a nursing assistant, a home health, and a patient care assistant course. And what is different about the program that I attended in Florida was that they had a clinical component to it. So I had the privilege to interact with elders who had various cognitive disabilities and difficulty moving about even before joining the workforce, whereas in Santa Fe and in New Mexico, we still haven't quite yet got either the funding or the passion, so to speak, to change the licensure and training requirements for nursing assistants. But I'm hoping that will soon become a thing of a past.
So you took this program to become a CNA, a certified nursing assistant, mm-hmm. and it included a component that trained you to work with people, especially elders, who had brain disorders or cognitive malfunctions of some kind or another.
Oh, yes. And it was way more thorough than just simply making eye contact or speaking in low tones or using simple sentences. I got to develop a fondness for elders and to practice looking at the world through their point of view and studying the nuances of communication. So I thought that having exposure in the assisted living environment or in a long-term care facility was absolutely necessary to my learning curve.
So you got your CNA in Florida, mm-hmm. and then at some point you came here?
Oh, yes. I had no intention of settling in Florida. Santa Fe is my home. I have lived here since the beginning of 1997, and I will continue to call this beautiful part of the country my community.
So you came back?
Yes, and I did a Google search, and as well as word of mouth, and the queen of Alzheimer's or dementia in our town was identified as Dr. Jutta Lockvig. So I essentially attached myself like a barnacle to her ship. And I met her initially when she was doing singing and humor in a long-term care facility in town. And I offered to carry her belongings and to join her on these excursions in exchange for the exposure, in exchange for the education. And when she sang "Good Night, Irene" in this long-term care facility, there were women who do not normally communicate who were singing lyrics to that song from top to bottom. These are women who wouldn't normally say, "I am hungry, I am thirsty, I am sad." Women who are basically mute.
Right, like the Oliver Sacks research
yes.
into how music works in a different part of our brain in some ways, and so that people who often have lost all abilities to speak can still sing or remember lyrics or even play an instrument in some cases.
Yes, and the people would respond
yeah.
to Dr. Lockvig's songs, and it was so remarkable. I mean, people who had contractures in their hands were flattening their hands and tapping on the table.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And people who were normally holding on to something soft or a toy or holding, they would put down their toy, clap their hands. I mean, it was absolutely mind-blowing. And I knew from that day on that I wanted to incorporate art and promoting art as a means of
communication or self-expression.
Yes.
Yeah, with people who have cognitive problems.
Yes. Well, not only with people who have cognitive problems, but definitely it helps them more so than the rest of us because there have been studies that have shown that folks with cognitive impairment respond so well to music that they will have an increased appetite, that they will sleep more hours per night, that there will be fewer incidents of adverse reactions, so
or
to
agitation
speak.
Agitation or
catastrophic
problems.
Behaviors. That's mm-hmm. what we call mm-hmm. those symptoms that seem to come out of left field and that baffle the caregiver.
So, let's talk to Stuart now. Stuart, you used to be a science reference librarian.
That's right, yes. And I taught a course in biology also that was sort of how to find information.
So you helped master's students and doctoral students do their research?
Not doctoral. San Francisco State did not have a doctoral program, mm-hmm. but I did work with master's students, yes.
Mm-hmm. And then what happened? How did you find out that you had dementia?
Well, I'd done a lot of my teaching without notes, all of a sudden I really needed my notes. I was relying on them. And I just felt like I couldn't carry it the way I had.
Yeah, you would, and you wouldn't remember. You told me the other day, sometimes with a student where you used to know exactly where they were in their research, they would come back in and you wouldn't have a memory of where they were.
That's right. And in fact, they were working on different topics, and sometimes I wouldn't even remember what topic they were working on until they started talking.
And
yeah.
Was that really distressing to you?
It was very distressing, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And so at some point you left your job.
Right.
And you and your wife retired as well?
That's right, yes.
Mm-hmm. And you came to Santa Fe?
Yes.
So how long?
I had always wanted to move to the desert, and Trish always said she would. No, no way.
And you prevailed in this case.
Yes.
Yeah.
Maybe the only case I ever won an argument with her, but yes.
And Stuart, have you always written limericks?
Well, limericks and other short verse, yes.
Uh-huh. And so when you started to feel that some of your cognitive abilities were being altered, you kept writing limericks anyway.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Uh-huh. May I please interject?
Oh, sure. Jump right in there, Sue.
It's a beautiful story, actually, Stuart.
Go ahead.
He initially wrote – he wanted to write a novel in his retirement. And to Stuart is a very gifted writer. He's been writing since he was a young man, when his sister brought home E.E. Cummings. He's always been inspired by the written word, and he aspired to write short stories, essays, and even a novel in his retirement. But at a certain point, he noticed that he couldn't edit his own work. And that's where – and if his short-term memory has a shelf life of between 7 seconds to, let's say, 1.5 minutes, then limericks became the medium.
Well, you know, let's just jump in. Let's have maybe Stuart can tell us some things about limericks and read us a few of his limericks, and then we'll talk some more.
Well, the history of the limerick goes back a way. It was first documented in – the United Kingdom in the latter part of the 19th century. In fact, the name is taken from the county of Limerick in Ireland. The initial use of the limerick was a parlor game that had a little refrain that ended come up all the way to Limerick. The first published book of limericks was Book of Nonsense, published by Edward Lear. I mean, he called it Book of Nonsense. And the first publication was 1845.
So, Stuart, would you give our listeners out there a sample of what a limerick would look like way back in the 19th century in the old days? Will you please give us an example?
Okay, this is one of Lear's limericks. There was a young person of Smyrna whose grandmother threatened to burn her, but she seized on the cat and said, "Granny, burn that, you incongruous old woman of Smyrna." More recently, the standard form of the limerick is 5 lines. It typically has a rhyme scheme of A-A-B-B-A. The limericks were often used for humorous drinking songs. Typically, the limerick is impertinent, if not forthrightly rude or obscene. George Bernard Shaw described the clean limerick as, quote, a periodic fad, an object of magazine contests, rarely rising above mediocrity.
So if it's clean, it's mediocre. Except for yours, of course.
Of course.
Yeah.
But traditionally, it is a transgressive form. Violation of taboo is part of what it does a lot.
Well, what I like about limericks is that it originally was born of drinking songs in Ireland. And right. I am part Irish or whatever, so that kind of history warms my heart.
So – I want Stuart to read a couple of his limericks, but I first want to let our listeners know that you were, in fact, reading the things that you told us about limericks. And if I had said, "Stuart, just tell me about limericks," and you didn't have your notes in front of you, it would have been hard to do that, wouldn't
Absolutely,
it?
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah. So it's easy for you. And when you read something like that, of course it all comes back to mind, right?
Right, yes.
But just to try to do it off the top of your head because of your cognitive problems, that would be difficult.
That's right, yes.
Okay, great. Well, do you want to read a few limericks to us, some that you've written?
Yes, and just to preface their first one, I want to describe a situation to the listeners that I think that they would appreciate. And I think that this is what sets Stuart apart from his poetry writing peers. You see, Stuart Hall takes a pen and paper wherever he roams, and often he will write down notes to document that experience. And usually those notes end up being in the form of a limerick. So his study at home has thousands and thousands of limericks. And, of course, he and I have the pleasure of having to edit all of them and to read all of them. So I'm sure we'll be friends for quite some time. But what I want the listeners to really grasp is that limericks are Stuart's substitute short-term memory. They're actually his hard copy version of short-term memory, and that he uses limericks to anchor ideas and phrases that would otherwise vanish.
So it's not just an art form of poetry.
Right.
It's his post-it note.
Yes. It's a means of surviving and thriving in the from moment to moment so that he may orient himself. Stuart, would you please read a limerick that describes this kind of scenario called Battening on Language?
Well, I will, but this is a bit of a cheat because it's not actually a limerick, but it's a short verse. Fasting, we become undone, if not to say unfastened, and there is no fattening to be done in battening down the hatches. Grand attempts to make some sense of this lead to confusion, not to bliss.
So, go ahead.
Oh, I want him to read this next poem because what I love about Stuart is that he teases me and he makes this work so fun. And an example of how he teases me is that he knows that I'm from a generation that was not very Latin savvy.
Oh, Sue, how old are you, just for the listeners?
I'm 41.
41. Okay,
yes.
And Stuart's 75, so he's from a different generation.
Yes.
All right.
But just for the record, we both of us look really, really good for our age.
That's right.
But as an intellectual and a peer and a role model, Stuart is so fun to be around because he does teach me on a variety of topics. But Stuart, would you please read this one that references ever important use of Latin?
And read slowly.
Okay, this is Vita Brevis, which means life is short. And if you would know what the rest of it is, it's ars longa est. So then is it cheating to say time is fleeting and sit around beating one's breast? Or should one instead try for art, a work full of meaning and heart? Or a treasure load of a poem, an ode, or a limerick, say, for a start?
That was great. I totally enjoyed that. So tell me, let's take a little pause here in the limericks. Tell me how you guys got connected.
Oh, do you want to try, Stuart?
No, you go, Sue, please.
Okay. I met his beautiful and supportive wife, Trish, and Stuart at the Alzheimer's Cafe here in Santa Fe. My mentor, Dr. Jutta Lockvig, is the facilitator with her other genius partner, gerontologist Jan Olson. That's one of her best friends. And they're both members of the Pioneer Network, and they're absolutely luminous. But we met at the Alzheimer's Cafe, and Stuart was asked to read limericks. And Trish and Stuart identified me as a nursing assistant who is so crazy about art and who is so involved in elders' lives. And they asked me if I would be willing to work a few hours a week to further Stuart's literary goals. And initially in 2011, it was to perform or read his limericks and to participate in the poetry kind of community in Santa Fe. But as of late, it has morphed into this wonderful project of compiling a book of some sort.
Oh, wonderful. Mm-hmm. So you're helping him to edit and go through all of his thousands of limericks mm-hmm. to create something. Yeah.
Not all. She won't live long enough. Yes.
Why don't you read us another limerick, Stuart?
I wanted to preface, if you all don't mind, I wanted to preface this limerick with a small explanation, which I think you will enjoy. Stuart and people who do have different brain diseases, they're forced to face one of our greatest fears as human, or one of the greatest fears known to our human condition, and that is total dependence. And Hollis, I think that because total dependence is so scary for us as people, that I think that that's why dementia is feared as much as shark attacks and right. other catastrophes.
Yeah.
But I wanted the listeners to know that Stuart's poetry is so unique because he uses it to mark his path. And this is a path in which there are very few posts, and they don't fall in any given order or any evolutionary sequence. Here's a rhyme that captures the sort of protective significance of his limerick, because he uses his art, as many artists do, to protect himself and to have something that's more insular so that he can cope with the realities of the day. But would you please read this one about limericks
yes.
being a form of defense?
Writing rhymes as a means of defense may not on its face make much sense, but, and here's my confession, it wards off depression, and that is its wherefore and whence.
Wow. It's wherefore and whence. That's lovely. I'm talking to Sue Foley and Stuart Hall, and we're going to take a quick break, so please stay tuned to the Radio Cafe.
Keep this page open, but just follow
Hi, me. I'm Hollis Walker, back with the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. We're broadcasting today from the KSFR studios on the campus of the Santa Fe Community College. My guests are Stuart Hall and Sue Foley. Stuart is a former science reference librarian at San Francisco State University, and he has non-Alzheimer's dementia. And Sue Foley is his mentor and assistant 2 days a week. They work together on Stuart's limericks, and he's been reading some of his limericks to us, and Sue's been helping to talk about how those play a major role in basically allowing Stuart to have a happy life. So
exactly.
Yeah, so let's do some more limericks, shall we?
Well, for those who are just joining us, I was explaining a little bit earlier that if it weren't for Stuart's limericks, he wouldn't otherwise be able to orient himself in space and time. He's a man who takes notes literally as he's having experiences. And the notes that he takes usually result in a plethora, a wide range of limericks, and they are so beautiful. He will write a limerick just to anchor himself in a chronological time. And in this example, he wrote it in winter, and he was trying to nail down that, yes, he was in the 12th month of the year. But he also wanted to anchor himself in the idea that seasons are cyclical. And I know that it's something that you and I don't think about. But for Stuart, these kinds of things and retaining this information is very important to him. So, Stuart, will you please read this beautiful poem that pertains to winter?
And now at the end of December, let's try once again to remember, if now anything, the brightness of spring and how every year burns down to ember.
That's beautiful. Thank you, Stuart. And?
When I first met Stuart in September of 2011, he was quiet, and when he wasn't quiet, he was very salty and kind of jaded.
What do you mean salty?
Resistant, a little bit, acting as a little bit frustrated with having me in his home, just this funny-looking younger person showing up and telling him what to do. And it was kind of awkward, and I really wanted him to take me seriously as a confidant and an assistant. And so I just listened for the first few months, and I didn't speak at all, really. I just listened to what he needed and wanted. And that's something that's really important for caregivers, and hopefully we'll touch upon that later. But as we worked together on his literary goals, I think that he started to enjoy life a little bit more and not feel as though he's gotten the raw deal. Because now he makes jokes. He is more – he has more social skills. And Stuart, you have a lot more confidence in your craft now, I think.
Since, oh, yes.
Since we have worked together. Is that true?
Absolutely.
How yes. do you feel about your limericks and your art overall, like, since we started working together?
Well, they've always been fun, but I feel like I can read them to somebody else without being as embarrassed as I used to be.
So Sue has reinforced your feeling that what you're doing is important and worth sharing with other people.
Yes.
Absolutely.
The latter particularly, that it's worth sharing. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So do you want to read us another limerick?
Yeah, this limerick Stuart selected, and limericks encourage adaptation, like adaptation in terms of memory loss and things of that ilk. Stuart, please read this beautiful poem about that.
Things disappear. Notes on a meeting of utmost importance, a greeting card from a friend, keys without end, cloth napkins. Is this worth repeating? You look till you're blue in the face. How can 24 hours efface socks, a pillbox, a pen, and keys yet again, and a wristwatch, and leave not a trace?
So losing things is a difficult part of your illness.
Absolutely, yes.
So let's maybe take a break here and talk a little bit, Sue, about tips for dealing with or living with or caring for a person who has cognitive disorders. What I've observed today as we've talked, that there are some specific things that you do with Stuart that helps you to communicate. One is that you do make eye contact with him mm-hmm. a lot. Listeners should know you prepared for today's interview. He's got a notebook with all of his limericks that he wants to read. You have notes, and you've been prompting him as we've gone along, right?
Right.
How else can a caregiver or a person who's around someone with cognitive disorders help them live more fully and not insult them or diminish them by the way we behave?
I think to be the best caregiver possible, you have to first start committing oneself to being the best human possible, and that includes self-love. Because you will all, and this is applicable to any human interaction, but I feel like that if caregivers can first take care of themselves well, then they will better care for another. Another huge factor in determining quality of life for the caregiver or for the person with cognitive impairment is education and exposure. First of all, you want to be a caregiver that is committed to navigating different abilities peacefully and navigating differences peacefully. For instance, Stuart tends to repeat himself quite a bit in an afternoon, and as a savvy caregiver, and I'm using the pun because that's the Alzheimer's Association program that involves training, but the more savvy caregiver, instead of responding with, "You are repeating yourself. You are driving me crazy. You have said that before." A good caregiver will simply present a new idea, a new activity, or a new topic to draw the person's attention. So you can literally decide how that experience can be with someone with dementia. And if you respond with being irritated with your loved one, then their health will actually decline faster and it will affect your quality of life.
Yeah, so that's a big thing, being very patient, introducing a new topic when the person repeats themselves.
Mm-hmm. We call that redirecting.
Redirecting. Mm-hmm. Well, you do that with children, of course. You know, it's the same sort of thing when they're kind of stuck on something and you mm-hmm. want to, you know, change their mind.
And in this case, we're working with a person who is very much an adult, who has a very long history of accomplishments. And to his brain, that question is brand new.
Right.
So your job as a caregiver is to see that from his point of view mm-hmm. and to accommodate him.
Stuart, do you ever find that people treat you like you were a child? Or talk down to you?
Well, yes, and treat me very impatiently if I don't track in a conversation. Uh-huh. Yes. I mean, people have been very nice. I shouldn't be rude about it. People have been very kind. But it's obvious that, well, anybody would get impatient with somebody who wasn't following in a conversation or who lost track or who asked the same question for the third time.
Mm. Right. Yeah. And what else, Sue? We talked about when we are with someone who has cognitive disorders that it's not a good idea to make light of it or to make jokes or to compare. In other words, it's not good for – I'm 56 years old and there are things that I forget and I jokingly say to my friends I'm having a senior moment. To joke with someone or to joke about memory loss with someone who has cognitive disorders or dementia is probably not a good idea.
Right. In our initial meeting, Hollis, we did discuss this, and the senior moments phrase, which is very common in our society, is fine among people who have who do not have brain diseases and have full brain function, because what they are experiencing is just a simple glitch. And what Stuart has is not a normal part of aging. He has vacuoles in the gray matter of his brain. And it's very insensitive for someone who doesn't have cognitive impairment to say to someone with dementia, I forget things all the time. Because what you are experiencing is benign forgetfulness. And what Stuart is experiencing is a brain disease that threatens and jeopardizes his relationship with himself, his grasp of what his life is, the direction in which it is going, his ability to relate to his wife and to others and to navigate the world in general.
And that, I mean, the desire to do that comes from, honestly, from a good place.
Oh, yes.
You know, because we all think, well, I'll, by identifying with another person that we may put them at ease. But in fact, it's sort of diminishing.
Yes, it actually creates a huge barrier. Mm-hmm. And it identifies you as someone who cannot relate to someone with dementia because you don't have that kind of sensitivity.
Right. Exactly. Right. Shall we have some more limericks?
Sure. Stuart, please read this beautiful limerick that pertains to memory deficits.
Well, I should say for those who know the limerick form that this is actually not quite exactly the limerick form, and it's actually two limericks. Today I erased a small dog by saying in some kind of fog they were thinking of buying, and I wasn't lying, something canine. I just slipped a cog. They'd got one already indeed. They'd told me its name and its breed. But as usual unsteady, I'd forgotten already. Peaches, they'd said, not a Samoyed. Breed is gone from my head. So a dog was the last thing they'd need.
Do you title your limericks?
Usually not.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Stuart, will you please read this love poem? Because I like it when your voice chokes up at the end. It's adorable.
Okay. This is a long one. Once he thought he would roam to Nairobi or Paris or Rome. But having been around, he found all these places as boring as home. He sketched, he recorded on tape, but Tokyo, Moscow, the Cape of Good Hope, and Jamestown all seemed the same. And Rome, there was no escape. Soon he wished for variety's sake, for some major disaster, a quake, or erupting volcano, or some, you know, avalanche of snow. He wondered, what would it take? A tsunami? A forest fire? Some disaster even more dire? Till he finally knew, finding love that is true offered everything he could desire.
Wow. Nice.
And also in the traditional sense that limericks were meant to entertain and to amuse, please read this poem. And this is funny because Stuart always says before he reads this, Sue, do you think people will be familiar with the paper folding technique from Japan and that it's called origami? And I always say, yes, Stuart, I think that's a safe assumption. But please read this poem now.
Okay. Trying to keep himself calm, he tried folding origami. His brother instead took to his bed, and his cousin just ate more salami. He folded up starfish and cranes, and he folded up turtles and trains. And he read a good book about how each should look. and he folded up horses with manes. So his cousin was happy and fat, and his brother envied that, while he, all unheeding, finished his reading and folded everything flat.
That's great. That's great. Stuart, do you ever get mad at Sue? Do you guys have trouble? They're both being
I get
cool.
mad at everybody.
He'll write a limerick that is critiquing something that I'm doing, and then sometimes I look over his shoulder, but other times I just give him privacy. But I know when he's mad at me, when he starts just jotting things down while I'm talking to him, and I'm like, uh-oh, I'm in hot water now.
What is it that you do that irritates Stuart?
I will act as his memory prompt. So when we are using the computer, I literally say, click, open this page, copy this text, right click, copy. It's very irritating, I'm sure, to him because I'm basically talking at him all afternoon and I don't really shut up.
But in most of the time, she's helpful. Is that?
Oh, absolutely.
Is
yes,
that right?
For
yeah.
sure. Yes.
Oh, yeah. But he usually just responds with how I'm just talking at him the whole time, and he probably just thinks that's what women in his life do who care for him.
I want to ask you, Sue, to tell about the Alzheimer's Cafe for people who may not know about that, how they can participate in that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Okay. Every second Wednesday of every month here in Santa Fe, the Children's Museum on Old Pecos Trail is nice enough to rent us a room. And in that room from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m., we hang out with one another, we meaning people who are affected by brain diseases and their caregivers and whatnot. But we hang out in a space in which we're free of any persecution or free of any judgment or any outside stimulus that we might find disturbing. Like, that's the reason why we don't meet in a regular restaurant or a regular cafe, because we want it to be nice and quiet and so that people can function as highly as possible. But we will talk about current events. We will make jokes and share really interesting news or information. And I come into the Alzheimer's Cafe because I play music and sing with the folks, and that's my piece there. I'm kind of like the pseudo musical director at the Alzheimer's Cafe.
That's great. And there is a website for the Alzheimer's Cafe, www.alzheimerscafe, all one word, .com. So you can find out more about that.
And that's right.
Yeah. So we talked around this a little bit, but let's talk about the stigma associated with Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia, Sue. How does that feel, Stuart? Do you ever feel that people are critical of you or judging you?
Well, people aren't directly critical to my face, of course, but they're kind of dismissive. You know, when I'm not tracking, when it's very clear that somebody's told a story and I ask them a question that they've just answered.
Uh-huh.
They're annoyed, they're impatient, and they're dismissive, understandably.
And so they'll look away or talk to someone else
exactly.
Rather
yeah.
than you and, yeah. and maybe not want to repeat what they said before.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So how are we as a society to reshape the way we think about people with cognitive disorders?
Well, I think first, as a society, we have to make a commitment to live more happily and without resentment and to nurture love and love of community. I mean, I know those things sound really mushy, but if you want to talk about dementia prevention and things like that, managing your stress and being a healthier individual and being kinder to yourself that will help you more than any supplement, any amount of crosswords, or any amount of new fads or whatever in terms of how to prevent dementia. But as I said earlier, I think if we can say as a community that we will navigate differences and people who do have different abilities more peacefully, and to literally allow another person that space, that flex, to be his or herself in the best way that they know how. And that's a very personal thing in it. But I think as a community, instead of looking at people as other, quote unquote, when they're not the same as we are in terms of function or abilities.
I think one of the difficulties is that in our society, we are less likely to have elders living in the home with us than our parents' generation. So my father grew up in a home with his mother and his grandparents, and his grandfather had a form of dementia toward the end of his life. And so this was a man he knew and loved all of his childhood, and when grandpa started to change a little bit, it was less difficult to adjust to, and he loved him, right? Mm-hmm. And nowadays, so many of us live without elders. We don't have our grandparents in the home. We may not even have our grandparents or our parents anywhere near us.
Right.
And so it's easy to see that person that we interact with at the store or somewhere else as, you know, just some old person or somebody with a problem. And instead of imagining that's my relative. What if that were my uncle? How would I respond to him? And you know, that sounds simplistic, but really I think it's all about community and identifying those we see in our daily lives as part of us.
I think that also after being a nursing assistant in Santa Fe for a while, that people from different backgrounds actually have different responses to elders. In some Hispanic or Latino communities, they will have a child in the home with the grandparent, and I'm not saying in every case, but
right.
With Native or Hispanic communities, they are more apt to have the elder in their home, and that it is true that in some families that when the elder has a brain disease of some sort, then they will opt to find the first place in order to stow them away.
Yes.
Uh-huh. As dementia in and of itself used to be called just senility,
right,
and was something to be ashamed of, and a lot of people felt a lot of shame around it. But hopefully that those times are changing and that we are saying, no, we will not separate ourselves from our elders because the times are tough.
Right.
We can learn together how to cope with these things.
Right, and sometimes one can, in my own experience in working in nursing homes and hospice with a lot of elders who had dementia, it's possible to enter into their mind space. You know, I can talk about limericks with Stuart, and we don't have to talk about things that are difficult for him to remember. Mm. It's like, where is the space where I can interact with this person and we can connect? Just finding, where is that?
Exactly. Instead of explaining to them or a person with impairment, say, you use simple sentences. Instead of saying, I want to go to XYZ store and get the purple sweater because I think it was 15% off and we should go there and then we'll go grab some lunch and coffee. You say instead, shall we get in the car? Let's have some fun.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Right.
To make communication easier. Let's read some more limericks, shall we?
Sure. How about – all right, Stuart and his wife like to travel a lot, and so that kind of is referenced in this poem. Take it away, Stuart.
Okay. It comes as a bit of a shock that I may never go to Ladakh. I said I would go everywhere that I know. That was always a bit of a crock. But still, I believed it some way, just as at the end of the day I'd have clear in my head every book that I'd read and have learned all the games people play.
That's a great one.
And Stuart, you and your wife lived in California for a while, and you and your friend used to go up on the beach after storms, as I recall, and you wrote a poem about that. Will you please read this poem about the beach?
Oh, yes. This document's blank as my mind. But still, it would be unkind if you were to mention my only intention is to pick up whatever I find, like a beachcomber searching the strand for whatever he finds there, and most of the time, exactly as I'm, finding nothing but acres of sand.
I think we've all done that. We all relate to the beach, huh? I want to mention before I forget it that a really great resource for information about Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia or cognitive disorders is the National Alzheimer's Association. Their website is www.alz.org, and on that website you can click on your own state and get further information about what's going on in your own area, including here in Santa Fe. So let's. How about another one? What else is in that notebook over there?
This is a beautiful poem, and it references some of the great writers of days past. So please, Stuart, read this poem.
Okay, this one's a little longer. A drowsy numbness doesn't numb my sense. That's what Keats wrote. I find I wish to kingdom come. I'd not, as Trish says, dote on what I can't remember. She means to say, surely, dwell. But there's no point suggesting the word dote won't do as well. So is it Keats or Dickinson or maybe Hemingway? It's obvious when all is done that each has had his day and each seen fit to entertain, each in a different forum, my curious, insistent brain. Could it have been Ned Roram? A drowsy numbness pains, he said. So that's the actual quote. Well, I'm alive, and Keats is dead, no matter what he wrote.
That's great. I want to make sure we get in that very last limerick in that notebook. Stuart read this to me the other day, and I just really found it quite beautiful, and I'd like you to read it.
Oh, I have no doubt that this is the poem that is going to make you insanely famous.
Okay. This is called It's Amazing What I Can Forget. It's amazing what I can forget, on which I would once have bet I could always rely. The meaning of Kai, the reasons epoxies set, the design of a lobster trap net, the address of my favorite vet. I can't quite recall, though I once knew it all, relay race etiquette, the Russian alphabet, why Niobe was so upset. You wouldn't believe what my mind can't retrieve. The surname of Scarlet's Rhett, main causes of national debt, source of thrust of an airplane jet. My mind can't quite reach what I used to teach or the name of an old friend's pet. How to handle a cigarette, the significance of Tet. I can't quite remember from May to November how pine needles smell when they're wet.
That's a beautiful, Stuart. It gave me tears in my eyes, as it did the other day. So this program, as you know, is normally hosted by Mary Charlotte Demandy, and she wrote a limerick for you, Stuart. She was sorry she couldn't be here today, so I'm going to read Mary Charlotte's limerick. A limericist named Stuart Hall could remember some things, but not all. Being old can be rough, but our Stuart is tough, and most days he is having a ball.
That's wonderful.
That's great.
Thank you so much, Stuart Hall, for being with me today, and also Sue Foley. This has been really a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Hollis.
Right. And
thank you, everybody at KSFR.
I want to remind everybody they can go to www.alz.org for more information about Alzheimer's. And here in Santa Fe, you can go to www.alzheimerscafe.com and find out about that special place. You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Hollis Walker, sitting in for Mary Charlotte.